You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
Hey, everyone. I don't know what it is, but those Texas lottery signs have a way of activating my imagination. I know that's why they exist and that I'm hardly the only person those marketing tactics work on, but I feel pretty pathetic sometimes. As soon as I see them, my mind kicks into opulent fantasies where I'm traveling to my various homes around the world. Of course, I tell myself that I would do so much good with those kinds of resources. I'd give to charities, right? I'd generously pay down family debt, perhaps even set up a microfinancing nonprofit to combat poverty in Dallas. But let's be honest, I'll probably buy a Tesla and a lifetime supply of Booker's bourbon. Do you remember a couple years ago when the lottery hit the highest it's ever been? It was like over $1 billion. The signs in Dallas had maxed out at 999. That week, my wife and I both decided to play the lottery for the first time in our lives. I mean, someone has to win, right? That was our thinking. My wife asked my daughters, and they each came up with a list of numbers, and she texted them to me, and I then went to a store and asked for 4 lottery tickets. I didn't know to say I wanted to choose the numbers, so the guy just printed them for me before I could stop him. So afterwards, I told Rachel about my lottery faux pas. She then proceeded to go buy 4 more tickets with those exact numbers. Why? Well, because if by some miracle those numbers won and I failed to get them, then I'm confident I would have been blamed for robbing our family of millions. So, for the sake of our marriage, she paid an extra $8. Probably a good move. I like how comedian Kellen Erskine talks about the lottery. First, he explains the odds, which are 1 in 300 million. That's a big number. To put it into perspective, in the entire Western Hemisphere, there are 900 million people, which averages out to about 300 million households. I'll let Kellen finish the joke.
So what if this is how the game were played? You walk in to buy your ticket, and there's a man in a suit to explain the game to you. Hey, welcome to the Powerball. Here's how it goes. We've placed $1 billion in a box. Now we've hidden this box in a random bedroom somewhere upon the American continent. Now here's the fun part. You give us $2, you get one shot to guess that address.
So we didn't win, right? We didn't win the lottery. And I can't say I'm disappointed. Really, I can't. The more I thought about it, the more I was convinced that winning the lottery would likely ruin my life. Sure, it would solve some problems, but it would just replace those problems with bigger and more complicated ones. Not a happy trade in my book. It got me thinking about how much we tend to depend on our circumstances for personal happiness. Whether it's finances, health, vocation, or relationships, people often look at circumstances as our primary source of happiness. If circumstances aren't as we like, we put our hope and faith into a different future where we have more money, or better health, or find more fulfilling jobs, or fight less with our spouse. Our happiness isn't our responsibility, really. Our happiness is completely tied to our situation, which is another way of saying we have no power over whether we will be happy or not, because we can't control circumstances. Maybe if I'm lucky, the universe will let me win the lottery, but until then, I'm just going to sit here and wait until my life decides to be a good life. Well, there's this well-known study done way back in the year I was born, 1978. It was done by the renowned psychologist Ronnie Janoff Bowman. In her study, they looked at 3 different groups of people. 22 people who had won the lottery, 22 controls, and 29 people who had all suffered injuries that left them paralyzed. So 3 very different groups of circumstances. And their goal in the study? Their goal was to study happiness. Interestingly, the lottery winners ended up not being more happy than the control group. That's unexpected, right? And the paralyzed victims did not end up as unhappy as you might expect. In addition, they measured the group's ability to enjoy quote-unquote mundane experiences in life. And can you guess which group struggled the most with enjoying mundane experiences? The lottery winners. If I can't enjoy $500 million, how am I supposed to enjoy a cup of coffee or a sunrise? It's a complicated study with many layers, but to me, it says some very important things about the nature of circumstances. Ultimately, circumstances aren't as powerful as we tend to think they are. Even in extreme cases like winning the lottery or becoming paralyzed, usually the immediate effects wear off. Sure, getting a windfall of money or losing your ability to walk is going to rightly impact your happiness in the short term. But what the study shows is that over time, eventually, the effect of that circumstance fades, leaving the person at the same level of happiness they were before the event. I have another issue with this whole topic too. I struggle with how our society views the concept of happiness. You know, being a word guy, I know the etymology of happiness is actually quite circumstantial. The root is hap, H-A-P, which forms other words like happen or happenstance. It gives meaning to the old saying, happy as a clam. Now that's a weird saying, and it's mostly weird because it's been shortened over time. Originally, the saying was happy as a clam in the mud at high tide. Therefore, the clam is happy because it's happenstance. It's hidden in the mud at high tide. Predators won't be able to find it. It's safe and sound. Circumstances are favorable. So, I often wince a bit at our general use of the word happy. I prefer the word peaceful or content. When we seek happiness, we are likely seeking favorable circumstances, which we usually don't have much control over. Peace or contentment is something altogether different. That sensation doesn't rely on circumstances, and we usually have tons of power, tons of opportunity to cultivate an inner life of peace or contentment. I'm obviously not saying that circumstances don't matter at all. They do have a small piece in the puzzle, but they aren't even close to being central to what life is truly about. Think about it, guys. We all know people in this world who either have found happiness despite unpleasant circumstances, or people who feel miserable despite their privileged situation. These people teach us two clear realities. Lesson number one, circumstances aren't reliable sources for happiness or peace. So don't put all your hope in them. Money, jobs, people's opinions of you, etc. They may feel good for a while, but the effects won't last. They will fade. Lesson number two, peace begins within. So control what you can control, which is to say, focus on yourself, your spending behaviors, your speech with your children, your thought patterns, your sleeping habits, and on and on and on. And on and on and on. And on and on and on. The primary place of focus might be our thought life. Every one of us has a steady stream of thoughts. Neurological studies even show how our thought patterns create wider pathways in our brains, almost like ruts, like a well-traveled path where the ground is compacted and the grass has stopped growing. This means our mental activity becomes habitual and very difficult to alter. 12-steppers call it stinkin' thinkin'. And I suspect this is why the lottery winners and paralyzed victims would eventually level out to the same happiness that they experienced before those traumatic events. Their circumstances had changed, but their thinking patterns had not changed. That means our thoughts are super powerful. More powerful than $500 million or losing the use of your legs. Are you guys following me? In the study, they even investigated how the groups felt about their future prospects of happiness. And for the lottery winners, they had less hope about future happiness, which makes sense if winning the lottery didn't fulfill all their expectations. On the other hand, the paralyzed had slightly more hope about future happiness. Why? Well, if they can make it through that, then, well, they can make it through anything, right? Listen, I struggle with my thinking. I can be judgmental, overly sensitive, which creates a fair bit of anger. Like, listen, my thoughts, my stories, they literally create anger, negative emotions conjured from nowhere, ex nihilo. So I'm striving to create new pathways in my brain. For me, I fight this by intentionally focusing on gratitude and compassion. And honestly, it helps. I can feel it working the toxins out of my soul like a gifted masseuse. And I'm not saying that I still don't slip into lottery fantasies every now and again. I just catch myself quicker. I have a couple tools in my belt to rein me back into the real world where my bank account isn't bloated and I have only one house that honestly needs a new paint job. And I'm grateful for that house. It's a good house. And little by little, I'm doing the work to make reality more tolerable than fantasy. That circumstances don't dictate the weather patterns of my emotional climate. I can find peace in the storm, or as St. Paul calls it, the secret of being content in all circumstances, Philippians 4, which is why I think he also says it's possible to rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say, rejoice. Blessings, guys.